Coming to you from the bottom of Lake Agassiz. Welcome to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Dougler, thanking you for allowing us to be a part of your weekend outdoors. I say this on a regular basis and in understanding that each weekend, each day is unique. And maybe at times we spend too much energy trying to recreate what happened last year at this time. I found myself kind of caught in that trap this summer, and I'm breaking out of it because it seems like last summer that we had much better weekend weather. And if I probably sat down and looked at it, we probably didn't. But when I think back of where we went and what we did last summer at this time, it puts you into a little bit of a trap because our mind tends to remember the good of most events or the highlights, the really, really crummy or the really, really good, where it was rained out, winded out, washed out, tornadoed, hailed out, or it was an absolutely beautiful, sunshiny day. My point in all of it is to realize that it's the last weekend in July of 2014 that you and I will ever have, and give it the just due of making it. Whether this weekend edition of Outdoors Live finds you spending some time cleaning the garage, doing yard work, taking care of some much needed work that needs to be done, don't fret, don't worry about it, get it done and enjoy, really, is what it comes down to it. Instead of thinking about what you didn't get to do, what you wish you could have done, put on a smiley face, get outdoors, get that work done, and get yourself doing a little bit of fishing, go for a little walk. Even if you just go for a walk around the block, down the road, down to the mailbox, whatever it might be, stop, look, and listen. And I think you'll appreciate what today is and not what last year was or what you wish today would have been. And I put it in context when I look at our biologists, our fisheries biologists, our waterfowl, our upland game, our big game biologists. As we speak now, a lot of brood surveys being done for pheasants, for grouse, partridge, and ducks. And what's coming out is the nuts and bolts of the breeding duck and waterfowl numbers. Mike Szymanski is a waterfowl biologist for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. So we're bringing out the numbers from what was counted in the spring while we're actually counting right now what we have for broods, which when those numbers get crunched will give us a little better idea of what your huntable populations are. Mike, let's talk about the waterfowl index, and maybe a good place to start is whether you're a hunter or not, just giving people a little idea of what this is.
Our breeding duck survey is about a week-long survey that we do generally in the middle of May, depending on how the spring is going. This year we did it one day earlier, just kind of how the calendar falls from last year. We started about the 12th of May, and it runs north to south on 8 transects across the entire state. Pretty big effort, and it's one of the longest running surveys in the world as far as waterfowl go too, so that's pretty interesting. And we do a little over 1,800 miles of transect and count out each side of the highway or road or whatever we're on, 220 yards each direction, and then we expand those numbers out across the state. So we have four crews in total doing these 8 transects. They're two-man crews. And, you know, like I said, they pretty much go from South Dakota to Canada on each trip.
When you look at the miles and the geography that's covered, those two-man crews have got to be very important, because if one person's doing the same thing, you might lose focus, and that could jeopardize some of your data. So it's important to have the two-man crews fanning out across all of these miles.
Yeah, generally we mix it up a little bit, and when you get into areas that have a lot more ducks and a lot more stuff to count, you have to be a little bit quicker about it so that your birds you're trying to count don't get all mixed up, because we're also going through the species, and then we talk about the social group that they're in, tallying whether or not it's, say, for instance, a pair or a lone male or a group of males, because that has ramifications on how those numbers get expanded, and they also give insight to the the breeding status of the birds you're counting.
Waterfowl biologist Mike Szymanski joining us on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. So when you're doing these counts, you see habitat conditions, you see water.
We're doing pretty good. Of course, I don't see the whole state. Mike Johnson and I run the central part of the state. We do get around a lot besides that too. And of course, we have all the numbers in hand. Our water index was quite high this year. We had almost twice as many wetlands tallied as last year. But one caveat to that is that our wetland index really doesn't reflect water quality or depth or wetland types. So this year's number was largely influenced by really small ephemeral wetlands, type 1 wetlands, which are great for pairs and migrating ducks, but they really don't carry through into brood rearing. So they're good for breeding ducks, but they're not going to carry water all that long. And then we also had a lot of ditches with water in them this year, and that had a bit of an impact on the index. But overall, we're sitting pretty good. Some areas of the state are really quite wet. The northeast part of the state and the northwest parts of the state are carrying quite a bit of water right now.
Mike Szymanski, waterfowl biologist for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. The spring, not the summer, but the spring waterfowl index, water numbers, all looking very promising. But there's also some concern on habitat overall. And understand this, when we talk about waterfowl conditions, waterfowl numbers in the spring of the year, because understand that these numbers are from the spring. When the counts are done, the numbers are tabulated. And as we are speaking right now, the summer brood surveys are taking place. That gives you a better picture of what the fall hunting populations will be like. Mike Szymanski, waterfowl biologist, let's talk about habitat and the look to the future as to what kind of issues we have right in front of us right now, how they're going to impact the future. All that and more coming up on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. And welcome back to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. Mike Szymanski is a waterfowl biologist for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. And if you missed earlier parts of the program, Mike was talking about the strong water conditions for breeding pairs earlier on in the program, and it's podcast. A big thank you going out to Bob Harris as he podcasts this program. And you can shoot us an email, outdoorslive@gmail.com, outdoorslive@gmail.com. And again, the program podcast with the help and the assistance of Bob Harris. And Mike, you mentioned how hunters, biologists, and even just interested people of the outdoors can understand that spring water is important for attracting breeding pairs of ducks. Then they need nesting habitat, and then they need brood rearing habitat. A lot of different factors going into the equation, and we've talked a lot about the future habitat situation in North Dakota, and from your perspective, Mike.
Right, we're losing not only CRP acres, but other grassland cover, largely due to conversion to cropland. As those CRP acres expire, I mean, those are pretty easy to track. That's a number that's reported through USDA every year, and it's a lot of acres. We've got less than half as many acres as we did just a few years ago. So you do see that on the landscape where there's quite a few less places for ducks to nest, basically. But we do have the luxury of having a lot of water. Not only this year, but over the last few years, and that helps ducks a little bit. They can nest in some kind of odd areas that maybe are too wet to farm, or just on the periphery of wetlands. Like you're kind of alluding to, a lot of ducks do nest overland in grass or other types of low shrubby cover. There's a few ducks that do nest over water, like canvasbacks and redheads and some of the scop.
Mike Szymanski, waterfowl biologist. Let's get down to the numbers. What did you and your coworkers find?
Our breeding duck index was one of the highest on record. I believe it was the second highest, which is surprising. It was an index of 4.9 million breeding ducks in North Dakota. Conditions were pretty good last year. And that's largely what our index this year reflects is mm-hmm. how well the population did last year, and then if conditions were good enough in North Dakota for birds to want to settle here this year. It doesn't say anything really about how good the season's going to be or how much they're going to produce. So last year, you know, when we did the survey, it wasn't looking real great for brood water. And then shortly after we did the survey, we got a bunch of rain across all of the state. And that helped a little bit for production last year. But then also Canada did quite well with production. So we weren't quite sure what we were going to see for ducks coming into this spring, especially with it being not a terribly wet winter. And some areas of the state, you know, like we talked about, had quite a bit of water and were carrying quite a few ducks. Now, those areas may not be all that productive for producing ducks, mm-hmm. Particularly some of the areas, you know, in north central North Dakota, where I think we averaged about 3 miles an hour on the survey because we had so many very small wetland areas and lots of pairs to count, but sure. You know, that's just not a terribly productive part of the state for ducks.
He's Mike Szymanski. I'm Doug Lear. This is the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the mighty 790 KF. Joe, we are talking about the Waterfowl Spring Index for North Dakota. One area where I really put an asterisk on it is when a biologist is surprised. And that doesn't happen that often, but when it does, that means that there should definitely be a highlight, a bold, an underline in that. Were there any surprises for you, Mike?
I don't know if I get surprised too much by what the ducks do because they vary so much every year. Sure. But it was nice to see that the survey was timed about as good as it could be without getting too late, because we don't want to be so late that we have vegetation growing up and obstructing our view on the counts, but not so early that all of the ducks aren't settled yet. And what we had this year was mallards and pintails were settled out really well. The diving ducks were pretty settled out. Most of those birds moved through the state in early May. But we had some other birds that were not quite settled out, like blue wings and shovelers, and it was pretty evident that their counts were going to be up. But, you know, even still, you know, we had over a million mallards on the survey, and from what we were seeing on the couple of transects that Mike Johnson and I run, we could tell that, you know, mallard numbers were going to be pretty strong this year, and that's what people want to see.
One point that hunters understand completely and interested viewers can relate to is that our hunter success at times is predicated on what comes out of Canada, because these ducks that we have here are produced here and they'll be migrating out. And in the backside of the season, those early November, late October hunts are going to be birds migrating in from Canada, which is why there's a lot of interest north of the border. Any even anecdotal reports at what they are finding in the prairie pothole region of Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and Canada, Mike?
Yeah, things seem to be pretty good up there for wetland conditions. There's stretches of central Saskatchewan that are also particularly good for producing ducks that have really quite good wetland conditions in those areas. And then the rest of the, you know, southern Saskatchewan and parts of western Manitoba that are important for sending ducks to North Dakota are also in pretty darn good shape for wetland conditions. We've got the table set, you know. Of course, in North Dakota, we gotta wait for some ducks to get to us too. We're maybe not producing as many ducks as we did, say, 10 years ago. So we're becoming a little bit more reliant on birds to migrate into the state to provide hunting opportunity. And you know, it's not the greatest position to be in to have to rely on someone else to produce your ducks for you to go hunting, but that's where we're getting, and you know, that's going to depend on weather.
Mike Szymanski, waterfowl biologist, our guest on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. If you missed any of this or you'd like to hear it again, it's podcast at kfgo.com. As Mike alluded to, going out, is there so many different variables that come into the production. having spring breeding pair habitat and water, brood rearing conditions. And then beyond what we have for habitat conditions and production numbers, for hunters, it can be the weather. An early cold snap that pushes the nesting blue-winged teal, mallards and gadwalls out of North Dakota, and maybe delayed weather conditions pushing birds out of Canada, we can be kind of sucked into a vacuum where we might not have that great of conditions. That's all weeks and months down the road. The here and the now ain't too shabby. What are people finding when they get outdoors doing some fishing? Pat Stockdale, CJ Johnson, still to come on this weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the mighty 790 KFGO. And welcome back to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. We have a couple of reports coming up. CJ Johnson with a Minnesota Outdoors report a little bit later on in the program. And just around the corner, we'll be bringing you a Central Dakota Outdoors report with Pat Stockdale. But before we do that, I wanted to give you a quick little update that the pronghorn applications for North Dakota are out and available. We are having a limited pronghorn season just in Unit 4A in extreme southwestern North Dakota. Southwestern North Dakota Unit 4A will have 250 any pronghorn licenses available. And it's going to be a split season into an early bow-only portion and then a later gun bow option. So if you get your name drawn, let's throw this out there. You do not lose your preference points if you do not put in. If you say, I've never hunted 4A, I don't want to go down to that area, you will not lose your preference points if you put in for, if you do not put in this year. 250 tags available. If you get drawn, you can hunt with a bow August 29th at 12 noon to September 28th. If you get drawn and do not want to hunt with a bow during the bow season, you can hunt, or if you do hunt with a bow and don't harvest one, you'll have the option in the regular gun season, October 3rd, 12 noon to October 19th, to use any legal firearms or bow equipment. The applications are out. They're due on August 6th. They are due on August 6th. So that's the short end of the pronghorn season. Full details at the Game and Fish Department website. Check that out. And good news, as a record number of lakes have been stocked with walleye this year. 10 million fingerlings with the help of Garrison Dam and Valley City National Fish Hatcheries. Definitely good news from fish stocking. 30-day-old fingerlings averaging 1.25 inches in length. So what you do is you look at that and say, it's going to take a couple of years. You're right. Just because it gets stocked in this year doesn't mean that those fish are going to grow in to be catchable for a couple of years. What some people do is they'll go back into our stocking reports and look at some of these new mom and pop lakes. You can go to our Game and Fish Department website and you can check out the stocking lists by county. So you could go into Ransom County and go, oh gosh, never realized that there was a lake here. Oh, it was stocked 3 years ago. Might have some catchable fish in it right now. You can maybe find your next great hotspot. Hot was probably the key word of earlier this week, but maybe you'll find the new hotspot or find a new honey hole. Someplace that maybe you've never even thought of going before. And along the way, the stocking report's definitely good. A record number of walleye stocked, 133 lakes across North Dakota. When you think back 30 years ago, we had less than 200 lakes that we were managing. Now we're stocking 133 lakes and still have great natural reproduction in places like Devil's Lake, which you still stock to make up for some struggling year classes, possibly with all the pressure that they get, but not stocking dependent on Lake Sakakawea or Devil's Lake for that matter as well. Let's get an idea of where people are going, what they're finding when they go with Pat Stockdale. You read her work in Minnesota Outdoor News, in Dakota Country Magazine, and she joins us each week. Pat, what's cooking outdoors this week?
Central Dakota Outdoors Report, July 23rd, 2014. Welcome to the Central Dakota Outdoors Report, a look at fishing and outdoor activities throughout eastern North Dakota and the Missouri River system. Once again, Devil's Lake continues offering up good walleye success. Try Graham's Island, Zeebock Pass, New Mill Bay, Pelican Lake, or 6 Mile Bay in 10 to 25 feet working structure. A lot of walleye are running in the 14 to 16 inch range. However, I'm hearing limited white bass reports. Reports are also light from Jamestown Reservoir, Pipestem Reservoir, and Spiritwood Lake, but there's nice reports coming from Lake Ashtabula. There, walleye remain active with some perch and bass mixed in. Try a variety of presentations and bait, with conditions varying day to day. Fish are tough to pattern on the Red River and tend to be anywhere and not too active. Try a shallow in structure near faster water and stay in a location longer than normal until the catfish want to come out. Try a variety of spots until finding something that does work. With the sporadic bite, anglers are using a variety of presentations with mixed results, but start with cut bait goldeye. The hot spell should help trigger better fishing. Walleye success continues across south central and southeastern counties, with good reports coming from Lemoore, Barnes, McIntosh, and Logan County lakes. The bite's slower, though, in Richland, Ransom, and Sargent counties. Try drifting or trolling with spinners and leeches, and find the weed edges or structure working the transition zones. Weed growth has exploded on small lakes, and shore access is reduced to available fishing piers and docks. Out west, Lake Oahe continues producing walleye the farther south anglers go, such as around Cattail Bay and the state line. Upriver in the Missouri River Tail Race, anglers are finding slower walleye success, although a few are still being taken during the day from boats. Try spinners with night crawlers or jigs and minnows, and there's a little bit of crankbait success as well. The evening bite seems to be the best. There's continued catfish success in the chutes using three-way swivels with pieces of smelt or night crawlers. Shore fishing success at night also slowed for walleye, though. Try a variety of depths on Lake Sakakawea for walleye and move around, although Douglas Bay still seems to be the best on the east end. Look for some success yet casting jigs into the shallows, and there's still a few pike and smallmouth bass from shore. However, salmon are slow yet, but anglers might want to try downriggers in 60 to 80 feet or deeper, locating smelt, and then working that area. Also try deep diving crankbaits, though. And finally, Lake Audubon continues producing walleye.
Always appreciate that report. Pat Stockdale with a Central Dakota Outdoors report. Coming up next is our last cast for this weekend edition of Outdoors Live. CJ Johnson, what's happening in Minnesota on the Mighty 790 KFGO? Welcome back to the last cast for this weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. CJ Johnson, just in the on-deck circle, getting ready to bring you the outdoors news from Minnesota. Earlier in the week, you heard that Asian carp found in Cottage Grove, the furthest north location on the Mississippi River ever located, a 40-pounder and a 20-pounder. And it's, you know, silver carp and Asian carp, the invasive carp species. The reason why I throw up the big red flag is I think people are starting to get numb to the fact that Asian carp are moving and zebra mussels. But one thing that we hold on to in the back of our minds as biologists is realizing, just in the name implies of Asian carp, that possibly our northern climate might be too cold, whether it's in the winter or even on the edges, for some of these invasive species to survive and to thrive. You've heard that about the emerald ash borer over the winter and how the severe cold weather hindered the spread of emerald ash borer in Minnesota. That's one thing where when you transfer that mindset over into Asian carp, the concern is, okay, if these are moving further north, we've got them in the James River system, south of Jamestown and down to Lemoore. Is that how far north are they going to go? Will they reach a point where the extreme cold temperatures prohibit them from being able to have a stable population? And as it stands right now, those were females in the Mississippi River system, which, again, not a good sign. Doesn't mean that they've got a reproductive population, but it's just another indicator that it quite possibly will be that way. And now it's time to shift gears and take a little look east of the Red River for a Minnesota Outdoors report. CJ Johnson has spent his career covering the outdoors in Minnesota, and we check in with him each week for a little better idea of where people are going and what they're finding. CJ, how's things looking outdoors this week?
Well, pretty good. The weather's been quite a mix. It's some really hot stuff lately, and maybe a little bit weird again this coming week, but it's looking pretty good. In fact, up at Lake in the Woods, Joe Henry says anglers experiencing some quick fills of limits with some walleye right now in the mix. They're drifting spinners. That seems to be the most common method right now along Stony Point, West Bar of Garden Island, and Star and Shoal. They're down about 28 feet right now. The Lighthouse Gap and Pine Island seem to be doing well. A lot shallower water there, 8 to 16 feet. And Hammered Gold, the hot color seems to be, and especially if you tip it with a crawler, leech, or minnow. And Joe also says northern pike are down only 6 to 8 feet along the south shore. Again, for northerns, the weed line is best. Tabor's Bay up in Bemidji says the weed edge in 10 to 14 feet on Lake Bemidji, holding walleyes right now. Sunfish being found in the reeds, and crappies are on the weed lines of Big Lake and Big Buzzle Lake. Some small bucktails have been best for muskies on Little Wolf Lake, Lake Plantagenet, say that three times fast, and Bemidji in the shallow weeds. Lana Heidele over in Ely says while walleye fishing has slowed a little bit, anglers are still able to harvest pike and crappies with good success. She says the pike have been active in 5 to 15 feet of water along the weed edges, as you might expect. Spinnerbaits and big crankbaits are a must for that style of fishing over in Ely. Johnson's Portside on Mille Lacs Lake says success comes from working the deep gravel down about 26 feet or the mud flats 30 feet down with spinners and crawlers for walleyes during the day. At night, Johnson's Portside says slip bobbers and leechers or crankbaits are turning walleyes on in the shallow rocky reefs right about now. Nathan Campbell over in Park Rapids says the recent heat wave left them offering more sunblock, ice, and sodas than anything else. But fast-moving baits seem to prove success in the coming week as the fish are really active right now in the warmer lakes. And Nathan says trolling along the deep edges of reefs or near deep sunken islands will put fish topside. When the water temperatures warm up to the current levels, walleye spend more time near those steep drop-offs right now. And the deeper, taller, and thicker weeds grow, the more attractive they are to lunker bass. So keep that in the back of your mind as well. Emily Schneider in Otter Tail Lakes Country says when fishing for walleye, look in 10 to 20 feet of water using jigs, minnows, snails, leeches, and crawlers. Then get out your sucker minnows and snails and use them to catch northern pike down 15 to 20 feet along the weed lines again. And also up there, Emily says bass are being found near docks and water depths 8 to 10 feet. They're using spinnerbaits and senkos or jigs with minnows right about now. Beck Art over in Detroit Lake says the area is expecting more crazy weather in the coming week, but the walleye's been biting leeches and crawlers at the 16 to 18 feet depth on Big Detroit, Sally, Melissa, Cotton, and Pelican Lakes. Walleyes have been shallower on pines and lighter right about now, and northern pike continue to be active on the weed edges, but some of the bigger pike still coming out of the deeper water. They're holding on the first and second breaks in many of the lakes. That's down 15 to 20, 25 feet. Doug, you know, growing up in Lisbon, I learned a lot from my dad. You know, things like, well, everyone you meet deserves to be greeted with a smile, and that no one is perfect, and that life is tough, but you're tougher. And I've lived by that. But my mom chimed in a couple of times when I was a youngster with a little advice, too, and she says, well, really, you know, I gave her problems growing up, but
I can believe that.
She kind of enjoyed it once in a while. In fact, she taught me about justice.
Oh.
And she said, one day you'll have kids, and I hope they turn out just like you. Well, I'm not exactly sure what she meant with that. Oh, well, remember, fishing's always great. It's a catch, and we got to work on.
Oh, yes, no doubt about it. Absolutely. We love the report. CJ Johnson covers Minnesota Outdoors for you. He's a regular feature on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. CJ, thanks so much for your time, your information, your insight, and the humor, too, my friend.
My pleasure anytime, Doug.
And one last report. If you haven't heard, Minnesota's deer hunting season will be the most conservative in more than 20 years, with numbers down. The DNR says it must rebuild deer numbers and put strict limits in place. The agency's Steve Merchant says in most of the state, hunters will only be able to take one animal. In the Northeast, the changes are even more dramatic.
14 areas that are designated as bucks only, those are concentrated in the northeastern part of the state. We haven't seen bucks only hunting in Minnesota again in many, many years.
No one will be allowed to take doe in bucks only zones. That includes disabled, bow, and young hunters. So not a real big shock, a real big surprise, but Minnesota rolling out the framework for the 2014 deer season. And that brings us to the end game of this weekend edition of Outdoors Live. I will tell you that we need to give a big thank you. A big thank you goes out to Bob Harris. Every week, Bob Harris is the reason why this program is alive and kicking. Without Bob Harris, there would be no weekend edition of Outdoors Live. So we thank Bob Harris, the executive producer, and Bob Harris podcasts this program for you as well. If you missed part of the program or any of the other programs, go to kfgo.com. And click on the Outdoors Live page and you'll find the podcast. You can also send me an email to outdoorslive@gmail.com. For the very last Saturday of July 2014, I want to thank you for allowing us to be a part of your weekend. Until next time, I'm Doug Lear, reminding you, as always, keep your lines tight and your powder dry. Have a great one out there.